You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. Is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everybody? Pat Loika here. You're listening to Loika Mania, episode 55. Of course, I'm Pat Loika. And really cool show this week. One of my favorites, one of my favorite colorists, actually my favorite colorist right now, Dean White, is going to be on the show. We talk about his career, how he started up, what he originally started out to do, and how he got into coloring. And we talk about his earlier days at Top Cow, where he kind of co-founded the coloring unit there with Richard Isenov, Brian Haberlin, and a bunch of other guys. We also talk about how he eventually got back to Marvel, and we talk about. How he developed some of his coloring styles, like what he utilizes for Uncanny X-Force, for example, and we just talk about random stuff as well. Plenty of information here. There's some process stuff here. Lots for everyone to hear and enjoy. I hope you guys dig it because I loved doing this interview. Dean is this is the first time apparently that Dean has been interviewed, and I thought that was very disappointing to hear because this guy. The work he does is basically it can make or break a book instantly. I mean, you can have a really good penciler or a good inker, and if you have a bad colorist, it kills the book. And Dean's one of those guys who really elevates the work that he's on. If you read his work on Avengers, for example, or Ultimates, or even Uncanny X-Force, all the artists there on these books are phenomenal. These guys are beasts. They're monsters, as Dean would have said. And the fact that he got to work with them and he somehow makes their stuff even better, it's something else. It's awesome. People should really start recognizing these guys because of all the work they put in, all the long hours they put in, and it's nice that these guys are like finally they're making it on the cover credits page, for example. They're making it on even on some books on the spines of some trades or hardcovers too. Every now and then, it's nice that these guys are slowly getting recognition because they do so much work and it's really a laborious process. So next time you're on Twitter and you see Dean White. His screen name is @DeanWhiteColor. Show him some love and thank him for that awesome coloring job he does on Uncanny X-Force every single month because he's basically developed the look for that title, and it's such a good look that whenever they had to have a fill-in colorist do a story or an issue. They pretty much said, hey, you know what? I'm going to do what Dean White does and follow that style. And it's a fantastic look. So that's it for now. Be sure to check out my social networking. Go to about.me/Pat Loika or just follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Pat Loika. iTunes reviews would be greatly appreciated for the show. And if you have any questions, concerns, or anything you want to bring up, if you want to request for me to try and get a guest on, you can do that as well. Send email to loikamania@gmail.com because I'm always interested in getting some new perspectives and hearing what people think of the show and the people I talk to. I'm going to be getting more creators on over the next few months, and we're going to get some creators who are kind of out of the ordinary. I mean, I have Dean here. I want to maybe get some more colorists on. I'd like to get maybe some letterers as well and let's see their point of view, as far as the creative process is concerned, because I don't think these guys get to talk enough, and talk about their work and their approaches. And I think it's fun because comics is there's like many disciplines involved in the creation of comic books. And I think we hear a lot from writers, and we hear a lot from pencilers and artists, and that's cool. And I got nothing against that. I'm just saying maybe we should give these guys, I think we should give these people even more attention too, because they're just as important as, you know, as you know, the writer or the artist. I mean, it's a visual medium comprised of words and pictures, and while the scripts are being written, those words eventually are placed there by letterers. You can't read a comic without a letterer, unless you do something like Nuff Said, for that Marvel did a few years ago. And of course, a good colorist can make or break a comic book, you know, and depending on the type of work they do. So keep that in mind as every time you read a comic book. And if you see a colorist or a letter on Twitter or whatever social networking that you've added them on, show them some love every now and then, because they really deserve it. They put in the hours, and absolutely worth your time. So again, thank you very much for listening. Thank you all for putting up with this kind of long intro. But now I give you Dean White. Enjoy and take care. And we're back this time. We're joined by a special guest. This guy has a job that's he has a kind of an unenviable task, because he can work on a book by a really good artist and make him look really good, and he could also work with an artist who could be pretty bad and he could still make him look good somehow, because they do a lot of work. These guys. He's a colorist, of course, for Marvel Comics. He is Dean White. Dean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Matt. Glad to be here.
Yeah, well, I've been a big fan of your work for some time, and you have a very distinct style. You know, your coloring there's a certain look to it. And whenever I see a book, I can't help but think that you may have colored it because of certain things. You've established some very distinct palette on books like Uncanny X-Force and on Avengers, actually. And it's kind of become your signature, at least in my eyes, the big question I want to start with is, what got you into comics?
I was in, it's kind of a weird story. I was first grade, and I couldn't read. And I was reading all the Dick Ram at the Hill stuff, and mm-hmm. teachers were like, mm-hmm. we're really concerned about him. My dad said, forget this. You're having him read stuff he's not interested in. So he drove me to like the corner liquor store and had picked up a Stan Lee Fantastic Four issue and had me start reading that. And then I just fell in love with reading. And the next thing I know, I was buying Isaac Asimov novels in second grade and just reading, but I kept on my love of comics. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of imprinted for them. And I did illustration for years and was actually showing stuff off at San Diego. And I was showing stuff to the two people that wanted to hire me was Lou Stasis at DC wanted to hire me because I was showing painted sequential work, you know, kind of like a cheap version of Dave McKean. I was showing that around, and Stasis was over at DC at the time, was interested in hiring me. Then I also had Brian Haberlin, who was just starting Top Cow in Santa Monica, mm-hmm. and they'd just left Wildstorm. And he had me come up that week, and I just sat down in front of the computer, and next thing I knew, I was just working away. And I looked up, and it's, you know, 15, 16 years later. So.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you started out with Top Cow. Was there any – because Top Cow, back in the mid-90s, had a really, really good thing going with their coloring. I think they had, you know, Steve Furchow, Peter Steigerwald, and Brian Haberlin, a bunch of other guys. I didn't know you were among them back then.
Yeah, when I got hired, it was Ezanoff had just got hired there, Richard Ezanoff. Mm-hmm. Furchow was just there, J.D. Smith. Steigerwald at the time wasn't really coloring. Mm-hmm. He was just mostly doing some really great design work mm-hmm. On the books. He did some – always really liked his design work on those mm-hmm. books. So we all started about the time, and then we were just pushing through. You know, I think at the time, you know, kind of coloring on the computers, you know, none of us – Brian was smart at the time – and then never repeated – it's not fair to say. I think we kind of drove him crazy. He hired a whole bunch of illustrators and who had very distinct approaches to traditional art, but none of us had really worked on a computer. And so you just threw us in there, and we spent, you know, 6 months to a year figuring out, you know, how do we translate, you know, what we did traditionally by hand – to the computer. So I had never touched a computer other than maybe writing a term paper for my college class like years before. So it was just literally just going, how do you translate this from painting? And so, yeah, there's a whole bunch of us doing that at the time, you know. And definitely the stars there were Easenoff and Furkow and J.D. Smith on Witchblade and all that stuff. But it was a great time.
Yeah, I mean, I distinctly remember, like, some books that they had put up back then. They were really trying to do new things. With, like, I remember there was, it was an issue of Cyber Force, I think, where there was, like, this glass of, I think it's liquor or something. Something that one of the characters is drinking. And they really tried to make that liquid look realistic with the coloring. And it kind of popped out and everything else seemed out of place because that was overly rendered. But they were really doing a lot of really cool things back then in coloring. And of course, like, how long did you end up staying with Top Cow for?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. I stayed 5-6 years, I think. I stayed through, God, I don't know, it must have been 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up working over at Harris first I started helping Dale Keown out on Pit, mm-hmm, for a couple issues. Mm-hmm. And then jumped over to Harris and stayed at Harris for a couple years, because the editor at the time was David Bogart, who's now the...
With Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, president of VP Publishing. I forget what his title is, but he was an exceptionally great editor. I loved working with Dave. Mm-hmm. And I stayed because of my relationship with him for years. Mm-hmm. And then I left for a while. Then I went and I worked with Stanley Media. I got called over to meet Stan and went over and met with Stan. It's kind of as a lark. And next thing I know, I was working there for about a couple of years and then went into games. And then, oh boy, I'm trying to remember what year. It's right before 2000. I came back, did some stuff for CrossGen, was helping them out, and then really came back to comics with Marvel full time, back to coloring with comics. So I was doing storyboard stuff and on the side as well as animation stuff. So I think Punisher Max, Garth Ennis, Luisa Rosa, that was my first full gig back into coloring.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
I kind of gone through kind of some big changes, you know. I think I just kind of figured out, it's kind of weird, but you spend all these years kind of coloring a certain way, and I remember just getting frustrated because the coloring, I could never get to translate to how I painted and drew in real life. So I just kind of threw everything out, left the window. So I'm not going to do anything how I did it for these last 8-9 years, and I'm just going to do it the, you know, this way I see it in my head. And I just went ahead and did on Punisher Max, and Axel, you know, Axel was very, very supportive. I was just there with those guys at that point, and just, you know, been going rock solid with those guys ever since.
Yeah, so you've kind of been jumping around from publisher to publisher for a while. I mean, that must have been something else. Like, was there like a big difference in how like colorists, you know, were being treated or handled with each publisher you went to, or did they treat you guys like you know, as an essential part of a creative team, like, you know, like they should?
Well,
or?
I'm really spoiled because, you know, I jumped in at Top Cow, and you know, I always had my name on a book. Mm-hmm. From the moment I stopped, I jumped, my name was on a book, and I got paid royalties.
Excellent.
And, mm-hmm, and you know, other people, in fact, you know, I generally wouldn't go work for a company until those things would happen, because, mm-hmm, you know, I'm not creating the world. You know, I have incredible envy for the penciler and the inkers who are, you know, drawing that stuff. But I feel like I spent a long time on this, and I feel like there should be recognition for the people that spend, you know, the amount of time that they spend on this stuff to get it out for production and get out to the readers, and hopefully the readers are going to like it. And I was very fortunate. So I always got treated with respect. You know, I generally wouldn't go someplace unless I did.
Excellent.
And if I didn't, then I walk, because it's just, you know, it's, I don't know, it's this job's too tough not to do it otherwise, you know. And you know, Marvel's always treated me really, really well. So
That's good to hear. Yeah. The coloring is one of those, out of all the disciplines, you know, in comics, coloring is one that's really evolved over the last couple of decades because of Photoshop and all this stuff that's been coming out. And, you know, just hearing from you, it's like you really were able to evolve and just, you know, learn and relearn everything, you know, especially from the last part of what you just mentioned, you know, when you went to Marvel. So it must have been a pretty cool process to just absorb all this information and then just try and, you know, render it, you know, on the page. Is have you ever, like, say, had a coloring job where they asked you to do something and you really had to rush and learn something really quick to do it?
Oh, yeah. Jeez. This career is just full of them. I can't think of one in particular off the cuff, but you know, you're generally beaten against the deadlines. Mm-hmm. And you know, like on Uncanny X-Force, you know, I kind of consider myself a little stupid because I came up with this really a style that took me twice as long to color, because I sit through in the hardcover, they show the process where I get the line art, and then after I get the line art, I drop a gray layer on there, and then on top of the gray layer above the pencils, I do this whole white line rendering. Mm-hmm. And I render everything out as a white line rendering first, and I go through and just, and I kind of match it up with Jerome's stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, if you look at Drew Struzan's art of book, where he has his mock-ups and his stuff, where he has mm-hmm. the gray tones with the white mm-hmm. rendering. That's kind of what I was doing. And, you know, that was something I came up with because I thought it looked best on Jerome. But the next thing I know, I got to get that book out. Oh, my God, how am I going to get this book out? You know, I can't spend 4 weeks on a book anymore. I got to get this book out in a week. How am I going to do this? So, you know, there's always things like that and, you know, tricks and stuff. You know, I'd say the first couple years was really the process of really, like, absorbing. And it's, I always think of that kind of line in Jurassic Park where you have Jeff Goldblum going, you know, you're too busy thinking that you can do something instead of should you do something. And I think a lot of coloring has been that, you know, ooh, we can do this. We can over-render that one glass like you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you know, you over-render that one glass, and as you said, your eye goes to that glass, but it doesn't go there. So what's the point of the storytelling, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think for so long, a lot of the coloring, and I was trapped in this for so long. It was like I was fixated on that, just, you know, doing little spotlight stuff instead of focusing on the art of storytelling and using that and how to make color work with that and to make the penciler's point where he's trying to get across and just really, you know, emphasize that and not worry about over-rendering everything. Just worry about, well, what's the point of this panel, what's the point of this whole page, and what's the whole point of the whole book, you know, and how do you play that all up? And, you know, that's when I kind of started throwing all that stuff away, so.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I never really thought of coloring as a major storytelling, you know, device until, like, you know, more recently, because we see more and more books, like, you know, getting really, I mean, how do I say this? The coloring, especially these days, is really enhancing the mood or like the story or of the title. I mean, you could tell, you know, like say if I pick up an issue of Avengers that you do, you could tell this is a big action superhero book because of the bright and the bold colors. And then you pick up Uncanny X-Force, it's more muted, it's darker, and you could tell that this is, you know, a very, you know, this cast is pretty screwed up, and you know it's a pretty dark book. And there are a lot of books that try to do that sort of thing, you know, for some time now, and it never really works out well. And I just think, you know, I look at it now and realize, you know, there's really, after what you just mentioned also, that, you know, there's really a lot more thought put into it. Like, do you typically get, I'm assuming you get the full copies of scripts, right? Right before you start working. Okay.
I won't start a book until I've read the script, because not only I need to know the time and day, but mm-hmm. I also need to know the emotional, because usually there's, you know, you have the physical conflict, mm-hmm. you know, the big fight, but then there's usually some kind of emotional conflict, and I look for those moments, mm-hmm. and then how do I play up those moments, and how do I make that, you know, work with the whole story, and build towards something. You know, like I trying to remember what issue of Kick-Ass it was that we did, where it starts off and it's a flashback of Hit Girl and Big Daddy, and you're seeing her train, and it's kind of, it's this, you find out later that it's kind of illusion, and so I tint it all a certain color to kind of, you know, play off of that. Mm-hmm. And then when it gets into the real stuff, then I go kind of the, I don't want to say real colors because it's comic books and I'm not doing real world stuff, but mm-hmm. you go with that, you know, that kind of world that you're building in there, you go with those ones. And it's like there's a scene in Kick-Ass where Dave is walking, and in the script, you know, he's walking, he's so happy that this girl's digging him. He's like, oh, it's so great, she's digging me. Yeah, it's so fantastic. And then the last line on the last panel was, oh, it's because she thinks you're gay. And Dave's devastated at this point because he thinks, you know, she's into me because I'm this cool cat. And instead, he's, you know, she's thinking it's this other way. And he's just totally, his male ego is totally deflated at that point. And so, you know, when I read the script, I'm like, oh, that's great. That's, you got to play up that line. So that whole scene, I did a sunshiny, mm-hmm. happy scene so that you're kind of going with him, mm-hmm. you know. And then when it got to that line, then you'll flatter with the colors. So it kind of really pops that line. I mean, it's real subtle stuff. It's kind of like, you know, I always think of coloring as kind of like the musical, you know, score mm-hmm. in a film. So you don't want to pick up on it, but it should be there kind of pushing you along.
Excellent. That's a really good description of what good coloring does. And in the same way, I mean, really good coloring, unfortunately, it tends to go sometimes unnoticed. It's someone that's actually studying the books and like really paying attention, then like really bad coloring really stands out. You know, sometimes like bad coloring can really muddy up a page. And do you have do you have other people look into your work aside from editors, of course? Do you have other people like, you know, that with that within coloring or within you know, other peers that kind of help you, you know, that you kind of show your stuff to beforehand before you send anything to a publisher?
Well, I always send, when I finish the page, I always send it to the editor, writer, penciler, and inker. Mm-hmm. I send it all at the time, at the same time, and then I get their feedback. If I'm really insecure, usually I'll send it to Izanov. Izanov and I are really close friends mm-hmm. from way back, and we can tell each other's work sucks, and we'll cry and moan about it, but then we'll go, okay, you're right, it sucks. Go back, I'll fix it. you know, so if I'm really insecure, I'll send it off to Richard. But usually I just, you know, I send it to the team because I want to see, you know, first off, you got to make sure that the artist is happy, you know, because mm-hmm. especially if someone, you know, I'm pretty heavy-handed in what I do. Mm-hmm. And I can only do that if the artist and the inker, if there's mm-hmm. inker on the book, if mm-hmm. they sign off on it. You know, you don't want to be disrespectful to the work.
Of course.
So they're the most important as far as that goes. And then I think it's the writer and the editor, you know. At the end of the day, though, you know, if the editor says, hey, I don't like it, since he's the boss and he hires and fires you to a book, you know, he's going to have the final say. But I must say, I've never had a trouble with any of the editors I've worked with. They've all been fantastic and princes towards me. So, you know, they're always like waiting for me to get stuff in.
Speaking of editors, though, as far as the process goes, you know, working on each page, like for example, once the penciler turns a page into the editor and you get the page, what's your usual turnaround time for each page that you do?
You know, honestly, it depends on the deadline.
Okay.
You know, I if I have my way, I'll take a day to 2 days per page. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, on some pages on Avengers, I had 10 minutes on a page.
Wow.
On you know, the last three issues of Uncanny X-Force, I've had like an hour to 3 hours per page. So it's just...
What were your last three? That was with Mark Brooks' stuff, right?
No, the last three that haven't come out yet. It's 15, no, 14, 15, 16.
Oh, that's Jerome, right?
13. Okay, I'm all mixed up. Yeah, there's two Jeromes and one Mark. It's the last Mark and the first two Jeromes.
Okay,
so that's 15, 14, 13. Yeah, that's what it is. And then I also, a couple weeks ago, I really, really injured my back really bad, and we thought I was going to have to go into surgery, but I didn't, luckily, and I've been, you know, working, keeping myself, getting myself back up to being healthy, and I had to work through that. So I was, I was in lots of pain during the last three issues. I mean, it's some of the worst pain that I've been in, but...
That just makes me appreciate those issues more when they come out, seriously.
I don't know how good they are or not.
I'm glad to hear you're doing better, at least.
Oh, yeah, I'm doing a lot better. It's just funny because I was in so much pain doing this. I literally have no idea if they're good or bad at this point. You know, I told the editor when I was done, I said, look, I might want to go back over these for trade because I'm in lots of pain. And I offered, when that happened, I offered everyone, I said, you guys can bring someone else in. I will just walk off because I don't know what condition this work's going to be at this point. It's up to you. And all of them were very emphatic that they wanted me to stay on. And they're like, if you feel you want to come back afterwards, we'll do that. We'd rather have you drive through. And so I did.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Uncanny X-Force team is they're insanely supportive. It's shocking. So it's really, really nice.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, though, I mean, that book is pretty much yours, too. I mean, because you've established such a look for that book that any time it's not you working on that book, and they actually had fill-ins, Matt Wilson did a few issues, and Paul Mounds did some issues as well, and they really did a good job trying to ape your style because it's become such a signature look for that title. That's got to be I'm assuming you're at least be flattered by that, by the fact that they really wanted to maintain the consistency of what you started.
I am. It's funny because I generally tell people don't have them ape my style. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like Matt really did. I feel Matt did. I think Matt went off in his own route, and I think
He
really
still
great.
Maintained a bit of it still maintained some qualities of your own style because of the. Just the palette and some of what he does for the lighting,
We actually didn't know if I was staying on the book at that point or not. Mm-hmm. It was we were trying to figure out, am I Jerome's colorist or am I the colorist for Uncanny X-Force? Mm-hmm. And Saad really wanted to work with Matt on those issues, and he hadn't worked with me at that point. Mm-hmm. He's like, I really want to work with Matt, and I think they did a great job. Mm-hmm. And then they, when those things were done, they came back and they said, you know what? We want you on the book full time. And then Rick is a very strong advocate. I can't, him and Jody LaHoop, who's the editor, honestly, they're fantastic cheerleaders and they were very strong. Like, we want you on here and we want you to be, I was really kind of hesitant because I did such a strong thing with the white lines on Jerome. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden I had to do that over Billy and Mark, and what their styles weren't, it's not something I would have done to their styles naturally, but they're like, please do this. Mm-hmm. And I showed it to both Billy and Mark to make sure that they were okay with it before I went too far ahead. Mm-hmm. So they were all really cool with it. So just moved on, and it is. I have a very heavy hand on that book. I think of it kind of like, I think Frank D'Amato had a very strong vision on Captain America for all those.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think Frankie really, he kept that book together. Mm-hmm. And, I think this is kind of turning out to have the same thing, which is not usually the way I would go. Usually I try to bend with the artists and make it work with them. On this one, it's a little more like, still work with their art. I have to be careful how they draw forms because, Jerome draws a form a certain way. Mark Brooks is a little more chunkier in his forms. So you have to be careful of that, when you're laying rendering on top of it.
Yeah, and the thing is, and we can really see that there's a lot of care into your part of the process because even though your signature style on the book is there, you're still able to let the artist maintain their identity and their style. And so you're not really doing much altering. You're just enhancing it and then adding your own thing, which kind of ties all the different issues and all the looks together. So
I never want to overpower the penciler. It is trying to mesh the two styles together. Yeah. It's adding that kind of, that it's just that linear quality that I add to it. But no, I never ever want to mess up the artist.
Oh, of course. Actually, you kind of mentioned it earlier. I wanted to kind of backtrack a bit. You mentioned you were you were into illustration and you were doing paintings. Like earlier today, I actually saw you post some stuff on your Tumblr blog, and I was curious. Did you ever get a chance to actually do full time illustration in comics, or were you just as far as comics go, you were just only doing colors?
Well, you know, like I said, you know, originally the two people I had that were interested in me was the Haberlin for coloring, but Stasis was wanting me to do like a Swamp Thing painted story. Mm-hmm. And I just got sucked into the coloring side, and I except for a trading card set that we did at Top Cow years ago, where all of us did all the paintings for it. In comics, I've never really brought my drawing side to it. You know, I've done character designs and storyboards outside of it, but in comic books, no, it's just been coloring.
Man, I feel like we're missing out on stuff here, man. Because that's some good stuff I saw earlier.
Well, you know, actually, I'm working on something for next year. So,
oh, cool.
It's just going to be my own thing. It's nothing through Marvel. Nothing through DC. It's just your own
creator-owned book.
And it's not even like a creator-owned book. It's just, hey, this is just my thing. I'm not even thinking. I mean, it is a creator-owned, obviously, but I'm not even thinking of it that way. I'm just thinking, I got a story I want to tell. It's a small, quiet kind of story. Things I'm interested in that I like to read and stuff like that. And you know, I'm just going to put that out. It's just for myself.
Cool. Yeah, I look forward to that. Let's kind of go through some of your process for a little bit. Like when you receive a page, what's the first thing that you do when you start out?
Well, first thing I do is I read the whole script and I look at the art.
Uh-huh.
I have to see, you know, what's going on. I have to feel kind of where the emotional conflict is and where the physical conflict's going to be. And I sound silly, but I kind of really try to. That's kind of my process. And then when I'm starting on a page, I kind of have, you know, I kind of know where that stuff's going to go. And then I lay like a flat color down for each panel. So I go through in each panel and I lay down a flat color for each panel. And it just kind of gets me thinking in that kind of storytelling. And so, you know, a scene, if it's like a scene that's happening in an environment, so, you know, let's say it's, you know, Warren and Wolverine walking through the Uncanny X-Force, they're walking into the headquarters there, I'm just keeping real similar tones. And I just lay down this flat color for that whole panel as one similar tone. And then let's say we start getting into action scenes, then I start making the colors in that whole panel, I start making them more saturated, more intense. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes out of the battle, then the colors start going muted down. So I lay down the whole panel, mm-hmm. and then I kind of think of the big shape. When I teach this stuff, I always tell people, think of Mike Mignola, Frank Miller, and I kind of like block out giant shapes. And it's kind of a painting technique where you think of like 3 to 5 shapes. So there should only be in the panel 3 or 5 shapes all together. So I'll take a whole bunch of figures and I'll clump them together, and that's one shape, and that'll usually be your foreground, then your middle ground, background. And so I separate everything out into big giant shapes and make sure everything's readable, and then I just slowly start bringing in the detail from there.
Cool.
I don't know if that makes sense, yeah, or if I went totally astray there.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. And of course once you get to that point, though, when you add all that detail stuff, like at that point you just finish it off and you send it out to the editor, and then you just wait for whatever revisions come after that.
I don't usually get revisions. Mm-hmm. I'm a little, mm-hmm. I'm really kind of spoiled that way. I mean, if I get costume color wrong, I don't generally get revisions. You know. Mm-hmm. I just send it off to them at that point, you know. But the rendering stuff, you know, the hardest part is usually the color planning, as I'm laying down flat colors for everything. Mm-hmm. And then I slowly try to get my color harmonies working, mm-hmm. and get like the progression from a quiet scene to an action scene. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a scene in, I just think of Kick-Ass real quick, there's a scene in Kick-Ass where the Big Daddy gets shot, but right, mm-hmm. before he gets shot, mm-hmm. He watches his little girl get shot. And there's a scene where it's close up on his eyeball, and it's all these real rich colors in his eyeball. I just went with a whole muted gray for that scene, just so it visually stopped you real quick. You know,
I remember that scene. It really grabs you there, and then at that point, it just goes downhill because it's because of what's about to what happens next.
Yeah.
And with you work with a lot of different artists. Actually, you know, you mentioned Kick-Ass with John Romita Jr. Of course, you work with him in Avengers as well, and then you work with all the artists in X-Force. And of course, you mentioned that you maintain good communication with all of them once you work on each page. Do you often get a random email, random note from any of them asking you to do anything specific for a certain panel or certain pages that's not something that you normally think of first? Or
I'm sure I have, but you know, not that I can really think of off the top of my head. I mean, I'm sure that's happened. I mean, on Kick-Ass, the only thing was on the first miniseries, they weren't going to use any blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny kind of said, you know, I want to do this kind of Mobius approach where there's, you know, European kind of style where we're not going to have any blacks. Mm-hmm. And you got to carry it then. You're going to have to carry all the coloring. And that's all he said. There's no blacks. I don't want any solid blacks here. Go off and do whatever you want to.
I did not even realize that. I'm going to have to look for that book again and look at and kind of study that. But I didn't even notice it before. But now that you mentioned it, I kind of realized there was something kind of off about it.
The first seven issues were that way. The eighth issue, that book has always been a real tough one to get out because, you know, we have to fulfill all our Marvel contracts that work first. And the eighth one, I told Tom to come in there and do washes for me.
Mm-hmm.
So the eighth one, he did washes, and then for the second miniseries, he's been doing the washes on.
Wow. Okay. I'll definitely check that out. And again, we work with a lot of different artists. Is there any artist who's like particularly tough to work on as far as their art style is concerned, or does that even factor in on what you do?
Oh, it definitely does. There are people that I do not work well with, and it's not because of anything on them. It's just that having the background in illustration and drawing, I kind of have to think how they're drawing. Mm-hmm. And if I can't figure it out, or if it's so different than I am, than how I think, then I have a hard time doing it. And then I just don't work with those people. And it's not like, it's not disrespect, because, you know, some of these people are great, you know, and it's just, I'm going to do them a disservice. I'm not going to make their stuff look good. And there's no point in you know, doing this stuff. You know, Izanov had talked about this. He worked with one guy that I'd work with, and he did a far better job on him than I ever did. And, you know, I said that from the beginning. I was like, I can't. You know, the pages were taking me 12 hours, and Izanov said, oh, I can do them 4 hours, and they'd look better. And he got how the guy was drawing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just that. You know, it's nothing usually – you know, it takes so much to draw a comic book that, you know, I never look down on any of those guys because they can do something I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can think of is whether I do them a service or not. And that's usually when I step out, away from something, is I feel like I'm not doing them a service, if I'm making their stuff look worse.
Okay, that's understandable. And I don't know though. I mean, you did say you have proven that you're able to illustrate as well. So I know you understand where they're coming from, but I don't know. I always thought that I've seen your stuff on some covers for various collected editions, and where you've colored
Marvel Masterworks.
Yeah, the Masterworks stuff and stuff. And seeing you color over older stuff, like, you know, I've seen you color over Jack Kirby stuff, and I thought you added a really interesting look to those particular books. Now, what as far as getting that type of gig, like how is that within Marvel? Like, did they just assign that to you, did you try to pitch to do, you know, like classic art, you know, with them?
Well, you know, actually, of course, Edel Meyer is the editor on that, and he was my editor for years under Axel's office, and he eventually left Marvel, a great editor, I loved working with Corey, and he left working for Marvel Main Publishing and just went off freelance as their Marvel Masterwork editor, and he called me up and said, look, they're going to paint these covers, and I want you to do these, and my first thing was like, don't paint them, they were never meant to be painted. Leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
you know, this, you know, and don't even computer color them all slick. I tend not to like that. You know, this is my personal thing. And I just leave him alone. He's like, Dean, they're going to do it. They're going to paint it. And I want you to do it. You kind of get, you work with Johnny. You have a feel for how Johnny works in his big shapes. You love this stuff. So even if you fail on this stuff, you know, at least I know you're going to, you know, I know you love this stuff. And so, you know, they're going to do it. I want you to do it. And I was like, okay, well, sure, I'll try it then. And, you know, and I never think, it's funny because on the Masterwork stuff, I never consider that coloring. You know, there's a real distinction to me, you know, between coloring and painting. And the Masterwork covers are always painting because it's, you know, I obliterate everything there. And there's things I have to change, like, you know, the first Amazing Spider-Man one, I had to go in there and all the buildings in the background, they were all done in all these different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And it looks fine if it's colored normally, but the minute you start painting it, all of a sudden, there's this real weird change that Corey and I started noticing is mm-hmm. that stuff that looks fine colored, the minute you start painting it, mm-hmm. it looks weird and it looks like you messed up. And so I had to go through.
What
I had to go through is I had to go back through and redraw all those buildings and put them in perspective. Mm-hmm. And then try to make them look like the originals and then paint the things. So
the weird thing about those images, though, like for example, there's the FF Masterworks 4 cover you did, the one with Doom and the FF, and I thought that was it looks kind of weird, but at the same time, it's really cool because it's like you completely did a new take on it, and like I said, the way you colored the background, like it's basically a pretty dark background, and the way you did that, and it really changes the tone of that thing because the lighting came from Johnny now, you know. So
yeah.
That I thought that was a very interesting take on it. And then there's your Uncanny X-Men Masterworks, the one where with Phoenix coming out of the water. And that is such a classic shot, and you've seen that shot so many times, and I've never seen it, you know, like this. It looks like a completely new page. You'd think that – I think that was a Dave Cockrum piece, and it looks like it was something that was just drawn like a few years ago or something.
Yeah, I had fun. I had a lot of fun with those. Mm-hmm. Those were a lot of fun to do. Yeah, especially the X-Men stuff. I was a huge, mm-hmm. huge X-Men fan mm-hmm. Growing up, so getting to do that one was just – no, it was a blast, you know. Especially it was one of the ones that was the most modern, you know, because Kirby stuff is great. Mm-hmm. But it took me a while to get the Kirby stuff down, mm-hmm. you know, because it's Kirby.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how do you mess up Kirby? Or in the Ditko stuff, you know, it's like, oh, my gosh.
And then
do this.
And the thing is, you're able to work with like a bunch of different guys and doing this painted style of yours. I mean, I've seen you color over Gabriel Del Olio, for example, for the covers to Ultimate Origins. I did not know that, you know, that for one thing, that you actually colored those. I thought he just painted by himself. It looked like he just did it all by himself.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I thought it was something he painted himself. And then I realized, you know, when I checked out your DeviantArt, I saw that. I'm like, oh, wait. And I inspected the books again. Like, yeah, you did do these back then. And you know, it's almost like you weren't involved in it because you're so used to like a painter, like, you know, like here having a painter painting over a painter's work, you know?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I think it's really cool. Well, and that you're able to, again, ape the way he paints. You're so versatile with, with your work when you're coloring, you know? And
I think it's really having that painting background, you know, doing illustration for years mm-hmm. and drawing. It's like, I can't, It's always funny because Johnny and I talk about this, mm-hmm. and I'll you know, mm-hmm. As I tell him, like, I can't do it, you can do it, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't create the stuff out of my head, you know? You know, if I have a model to work from, I'm pretty secure mm-hmm. that I can do a competent, you know, drawing and painting, but doing it out of your head's tough. Mm-hmm. But I think having that background helps. And then you're looking at Gabriel's stuff, and Gabriel's just, mm-hmm. he's fantastic, you know? So then you look at it and go, well, how do you try to, how do you try to bring that quality to it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't think you ever do, you know, I think Gabriel does a better job by himself, but, you know, it's like the same thing with working with Sod, you know, it's intimidating. You work with these guys who are mm-hmm. full painters, you know, mm-hmm. and every time I send a page into a Sod, and Sod's just, you know, super great to work with, super nice.
Yeah, Assad's a really fun dude. Have you ever met him in person?
You know, I just met him one time, and he didn't really know who I was at the time, but he seemed like he was just, you know, he seems like he has a great personality. It just cracked me up, and then since we've been working on Ultimates, he's been nothing but incredibly supportive. I can't ask for much more. But, you know, the guy's a great painter, and I look at his stuff, and it's like, really, you want me to go over and mess with your stuff? I hope I don't suck too much, you know, all right, you know, because guy... You know, the cat has it, man. The guy can just, you know, paint a book like no one's business. So, you know, who am I to come in here and, you know, color this stuff up? But it seems to be working out really good, and he's very happy. So that's all I can ask for.
That's good to hear. And looking again through, you know, some of the stuff you've done before, I mean, you work with a lot of really, really great, you know, pencilers, and I mean for one thing, I mean, you got to color, you know, I hate to say it, but you got to color the last story that Gene Colan never got to draw. And
oh, yes.
that must have been something else, you know.
That was
special, yeah.
You know, actually, what was helpful is I started getting those pages in, and I called up Tom Palmer, and, you know, I'm fortunate enough that, you know, actually Tom Palmer, Klaus Janson, they've been huge cheerleaders for me at Marvel.
Awesome.
I can't ask, you know, because the guys can draw, they can paint, they've done coloring, you know, so they're really sympathetic to all that stuff, and they're very, 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 you know, old school gentleman. So I call it Tom, and I said, Tom, I got these Gene Colan pages in. My God, this guy's, you know, how am I going to color this? I mean, it's Gene. I'm just going to mess it up. How am I going to color Gene? And he's like, Dean, you know, if you look at how Gene draws, he draws into the shadows. You have to look at the figure. It's like he'll draw the whole figure, and he'll put it all in shadows, and you have to kind of find the form inside there. And it was that little clue that kind of gave me, you know, my way into coloring Gene. And I, you know, I was pretty nervous. It's Gene Colan. And, you know, you look at the reviews, and there's people that hated it because, you know, it's this modern style coloring on him. And there's people that loved it. And all I could go by at the end of the day is I'd send stuff into Gene, and Gene would be like, this is the best I've ever been colored. You've made me super happy.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he was like, when we finished it, he's like, I'd love you to go back and color some of my other stuff. You know, so he was... That was great for me. I was like, you know, as long as Gene's happy, you know, I didn't feel like it was my job to do. It's this kind of weird thing because it's, especially if you're kind of heavy with what you do and you're coloring like I am, you have to feel like you're really respectful.
Of course.
And really, it was all about Gene. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he gives you the okay, you have to own the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have to go in there and go, okay, you signed off on, you like this. Now I have to own it and I have to make it mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that you're going to change it. It's just that you have to really go in there. I mean, this is at least how I think about it. So you have to really go in there and just say, this is my artwork now, and I'm going to just kick butt on it. And I think, you know, when everyone does that in a stage, in a book, you get books that really shine. And I was lucky on the Gene stuff that he was happy with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, working with Gene was great, you know. And I've done a couple of stuff with John Sr. that's been really kind of cool, too.
That's awesome. And also, you got to work with one of my favorites right now, Eduardo Risso, on Logan.
Oh. That was fun.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Yeah, he likes, you know, every page of his, he tells, you know, he's telling a story, and then there's another story going on in the background, like, especially in his 100 Bullets work. And how was that? I mean, you mentioned it was fun, but, like, how was that, like, getting to color that guy?
Well, you know, it's funny, because both the Gene and the Rizzo ones, they're frustrating on one end and great on the other end. They're frustrating because, you know, you get these books, and really, you're like, why am I coloring this? Just put this out like this in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this to the editors, like, no, it has to be color, mm-hmm. you know. And it's like, okay. And then you do the color, and you try to do your best job, and then they release black and white versions. And you're like,
oh, yes.
Oh,
I remember that.
I lose. I lose on the stuff. And the Rizzo stuff, you know, Rizzo is just an amazing artist. I love Rizzo's work. He has stuff in the background that will link panel to panels up.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing compositional stuff. And, you know, when I got that stuff, I ended up doing a traditional watercolor technique. So I called it my cheap blue line. So I printed everything out in my Epson printer, and then I went through and you know, print everything out into almost like a sepia color. So the line was like a sepia color. And I got these plastic overlays that I'd go through my printer and I could put on top so I could see the black. And I took my watercolors out and I watercolored that whole book.
Oh, and wow. Just, okay.
Yeah. Well, and it was weird because what I did is when I first started watercoloring, I was being really reserved. So for a long time there, I was doing color keys for myself, which is I'd shrink like pages down to like, you know, 2 inches high. And then real quickly color key, you know, paint on top of every page and go through the whole book and plan out the colors for the whole book. And I did that for Logan, where I real quickly went through and kind of just planned out, you know, this was a big blob of a color, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Kind of understood where I wanted the colors to go. And then I got the watercolors, and I just, you know, did everything traditional. I have, you know, a giant stack in my closet here of just all the pages. Did it all traditional watercolor, and then I scanned it back into my computer and just synced it all back up that way.
Wow. Okay. I did not know that. See, you not only do you do you know the computer coloring, you do it by hand as well when you need to. That's again impressive.
And well, you know, like a lot of people, I like, you know, I always look at Electra Lives Again.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
You know, Varley, just jaw dropping stuff. The second issue of the Jeff Loeb Tim Sale Superman for All Seasons.
Yeah.
The second issue there, the guy colored that. It was just, and I'm totally spacing on his name right now, and I feel really bad, but that was just gorgeous coloring. And like Richmond Lewis's stuff on Batman Year One. So I was looking at all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of my impetus when I jumped on Logan. I don't know if Rizzo ever liked it. I never communicated with him. I think I heard that he might not have been too hot on it, like he wanted more of a flat color, but I don't know if that's true or not. I know I got a lot of, you know, other people really liked it a lot, so I had a blast with it.
Yeah, I thought it looked great. I thought it was, you know, it worked really well with Rizzo's style, so I think you did good. I mean, yeah, Rizzo rarely does, you know, U.S. appearances, so you may never know how he really felt about it. But I thought it turned out good, and you said a lot of people, you know, thought so too. At this point, I have one listener question here that they have for you. It's a question is from Alan Rebo, and he asks, as a colorist, what steps do you take to minimize the issue of colors on print? By this, I mean situations like the color appearing to be darker on paper than on a monitor.
Well, you know, you never really complete control of that one, really. Well, first, thanks for the question. You're not always in control of that one. The best you can do is you get the book that's printed from the house that's printing it, and then you try to calibrate your computer monitor to that. Mm-hmm. So that you know that in general where they're supposed to, you know, print at. But fluctuations happen in print runs, and all of a sudden it'll be darker or lighter, or the color plates will shift. Mm-hmm. And the thing I focus on is making my values correct. Like I always call myself a valueist, not a colorist, so that I get all my colors, all my values correct. So like I'll color a whole thing and I'll put like a black layer on top of it and I'll turn the black layer to color. So it turns my whole computer colored page will turn into a grayscale. And I can see, you know, what's working, what's not working, what you can see, not see. And I try to make sure it works in grayscale. So therefore, if the colors shift or if it prints up and down, the values still stay the same. So everything still should be readable. And really, that's the best you can do.
Excellent. And actually, I've been meaning to ask this earlier. You mentioned you hurt your back and all that. Like, how many hours a day do you actually spend sitting down and coloring?
Oh, boy.
Just out of curiosity.
7 days a week, 12 to 16 hours a day.
Wow. And do you try any kind of variation, though? Like, do you like, set up your workstation, for example, so you can color standing up or just something to kind of ease your back a little bit? Or
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I bought a stand-up – I bought it with this desk. I recommend it to everyone. It's called a Geek Desk. Mm-hmm. It was like $7.99, and it's all the other stand-up ones are like $2,000. Mm-hmm. This one's $799 at the time, and it's just – you can move it up and down. Mm-hmm. And so I do move it up and down, but I can't stand all day and I can't sit all day. So I try to stand for roughly about 4 hours. You know, 4 or 5 hours a day, and go from there. But my schedule fluctuates. You know, like my schedule's been real insane. I've been doing 7 days a week. I did, you know, I was up from late Wednesday night to Friday evening to get okay, excellent.
Yeah, I saw your tweet about that. I'm like, man, that's like the roughest schedule ever.
Well, yeah, I mean, the hard thing is you're like, I've been doing this for 5-6 weeks where I've been doing all-nighter every week, and I've been doing a book a week and also in lots of pain with the back and getting the back better. And I got to do that one more week next week with Ultimates 2. And then after that, my schedule, you know, Marvel and I talked a whole lot and we worked out my schedule. So it's more to like a 2 weeks a book, which is a lot better. You know, that's going to give me a lot of room to make sure I can do the quality I want to do. Cause that's really important. I want to do good work, you know, and I really felt like, unfortunately, on Avengers and even on Cap, I wasn't able to, you know, do the work that, I wanted to do on the book, and I felt like I let those books down, and I came off of those books just really kind of depressed. And
see,
work on Kang X-Force kind of brought me back up, and I felt really great. I started feeling good about where I wanted to go, and then Ultimates came, and it was just like, you know, I felt like I was swinging again. So, you know, it's just about. It's weird because you want to be a businessman, you want to be an artist, and it's trying to combine the combination of the both of those.
Yeah, that's always hard. It's always a struggle to kind of balance that. You know, business, because it's always good for you to just take the work and, you know, and make more, you know, of course, make as much as you can out of it. At the same time, you get to that point where you might be overexerting yourself. I mean, right now you have you're really just full, you know, ongoing on Uncanny and Ultimates, right? Because you left Avengers just recently. So yeah. You have two books. Like, do you have like other side projects aside from, you know, that within Marvel, or just this is it for you right now?
I think that's it for me right now. I've been offered a lot of stuff. I felt like my time on Avengers and Cap, I just wasn't able to do what I wanted to do, and I didn't want to be back there again. Like, I felt like, you know. I just didn't feel like I'd long for the industry if I just kept on that pace. Like, I just couldn't do that kind of stuff. And so for right now, I'm just focusing on trying to do the best work I can. I still got Kick-Ass. Mm-hmm. You know, we put Kick-Ass out. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just going to come in there and jump in. And if Marvel needs help with any books, I'll just jump in and help them when I have free time. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just going to keep on working on my own book, too. You know, I'm going to just slowly just... you know, getting that out there. For me really right now, it's just trying to make a living, mm-hmm. support the kids, mm-hmm. and do the best darn work I can. You know, I look at people like, you know, Ivanov, who's, you know, that guy does this great work, you know.
He's just amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and a great friend. Mm-hmm. You know, I see what Laura's doing on Thor. She's done some great work on Thor. Wow, it's impressive. You know, you got Ponzer doing this amazing stuff. I look at all these guys, McKay. You know, you just go on and on. I look at all these guys doing really good work, and it's like, well, that's what I want to do. You know, I just want to focus on doing my good work.
Yeah, I mean, we're really lucky. We're spoiled right now. Us readers are spoiled because of all the really, really great colorists that are like involved in all these great books. You know, I mean, in the end, like if you have a really like I said earlier, if you have a terrible colorist on the book, you'll really notice it. If you have a really good colorist, you won't notice it, or you'll really appreciate it when you do notice it, because they add so much. You guys add so much to each book.
Well, I always think it's like, I want to hear, mm-hmm. the best thing I can hear in a review is, this artist's work has never looked better. You know, so that means that if I read that in a review, I think, well, that colorist has done their job then, because they're enhancing what's there, and they're not detracting from it.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
and I've done that. I've done stuff where I'm not happy with, and it's like, mm-hmm. I did a disservice to this book, and the penciler gets the bad review. That's horrible. You know, so.
Well, I can certainly say you're probably the best thing to ever happen to Jerome Pena's work, and he was already good to begin with. And you're also the best thing. You're also one of the best things to ever happen to John Romita Jr. because his stuff under your colors, they really popped, man. Like, especially the Avengers stuff. I mean, I understand, I respect the fact that you were kind of unhappy with your Avengers work. I thought it was phenomenal.
Well, thank you. Johnny's great. I mean, I remember Axel calling me up and going, Dean, I want you to work on John Romita Jr. It's going to be Reginald Hudson, John Jr., Klaus Janson, Dean White, Black Panther. And I said, and he's like, you're going to do it, right? And I'm like, give me a day. And he's like, what? Why are you going to call it John? I'm like, yeah, Johnny scares the living crud out of me. That guy's scary. He's a monster. I took a walk. And I think my son was 6-7 months old. So I had him like in one of those like baby yarn things where he's in front of me. And I'm walking going, oh, my God, how are you going to color Johnny? I mean, it's – and then I thought of Mike Mignola painting himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's how you color Johnny. That's my impetus for it. So it's all about big shapes. So Johnny – I started thinking about Johnny as kind of animation coloring. And, you know, so I started approaching him as big shapes, you know, not worrying about the detail stuff. And it's all about big shapes with him. And then you can add the details onto it, but it's starting with that big shape stuff first. And then it was easy. Then working with Johnny, just, you know, he's fantastic. And, you know, it's
He's really good. I mean, he really makes it look very effortless. And again, he makes it look so easy. And you're just like, how does he do it? And he has such a great style too. You know, that I always love the way he just renders his shapes and all the forms and the way he does, you know, musculature. It's pretty badass.
Well, I think, you know, Johnny's a great guy.
Yeah.
Really. Really nice guy, and I think that comes through in his pencils. I think some of your personality comes through on your artwork, and I definitely think there's a fun. I mean, Johnny's a guy, so we can all get pissed off, and that can come through too. But there's a kind of funness to his stuff, and when you talk to him, he's kind of that kind of way, and I think that comes through. That's him, you know. Yeah, his stuff's great. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And to close out our interview here. My last question for you is this. What is your favorite page or panel that you've ever colored?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think for Johnny, for sentimental reasons, it's probably Black Panther, the cover to number one.
That's a good choice.
Mm-hmm. That was me just going, okay, I'm going to go crazy, and these guys are going to probably hate it. And this kind of set the pace, and they ended up loving it, him and Klaus. And for Jerome, it has to be for each artist, you know. Okay. I don't know, you know, because I'm lucky, you know. I Assad was saying something. I'm like, you know, who? I was just saying, I'm working with you. Mm-hmm. I'm working with Jerome. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with Johnny. Mm-hmm. You guys are monsters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I consider myself very blessed to be able to work with you guys. So, you know, I don't know. You know, for each one, it's different. You know, and I have to say. You know, working with Jerome has been really a lifesaver because I got to work with him at a point where I was unhappy with stuff, and I responded to his work in a certain way that took my work in a whole different level, and I feel like I stepped up, I improved a whole nother level working with Jerome. Not that I improved myself, you know, I got better, and it was all responding off of Jerome's stuff, and it took my whole stuff to a whole nother level. So I consider myself very lucky to work with these guys.
All right. And, Dean, where can people – actually, before that, Ultimates comes out – actually, by the time this comes out, the Ultimates volume – the first issue of Ultimates will be out. So be sure that you know, people listening to this show should check it out because the preview pencils have been awesome. I mean, the preview pages have been awesome. Like the pages they showed of the – I think they're the European superheroes, I believe. That was just one of the most badass things I've seen in a long time, and you and Assad really kicked some ass on those pages.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Ultimates is great. I mean, Hickman has written a great script. I did one issue on Kenny X-Force, and there was a what the F moment. I was like, oh my God, what the F is happening here? Rick, what did you do? You're insane maniac. Because it's just funny. I think Rick is a phenomenal writer. And then the next week I'm working on Ultimates, and it's the same thing. I'm like, what the F did you do, Hickman? How are you going to work yourself out of this? I mean, so I think Ultimates is a really solid book. I'm really, you know, Hickman and Assad have really delivered on it, so I'm very happy to be on there.
Awesome. I can't wait to read it. And where can people find you online, Dean?
I'm usually on Twitter, Dean White Color, on Twitter. I'm not an everyday poster. I generally post when I'm on my deadlines and I'm trying to keep myself awake. And then on the DeviantArt site. Just look for Dean White under DeviantArt, and I have a whole bunch of stuff there. And then I'll probably be updating. I have a Tumblr blog that I just started recently too. So,
and yeah, you guys can see you know, Dean's illustrations and his paintings on his Tumblr blog, and I will link that in the show notes for this episode once it's out.
Great, great. And I really, you know, I thank everyone who goes out and buy the books. I just have to say this real quickly, because without you guys, we don't have an industry, and it's getting, you know, it's getting tougher and tougher with this economy. So I really appreciate everyone of you guys going out there and buying the books. I mean, thank you so much, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, well, thank you for making them, Dean. Again, you guys do phenomenal work, and you mentioned earlier that you feel lucky that you got to work with guys like, you know, Esad Ribic and John Romita Jr. and Jerome Pena. And I have to say, they're pretty lucky to work with you as well, man, because you you do phenomenal work. And again, I've been a fan for quite some time now. You know, it's not often that you know colors get to have their say, and it kind of sucks for me to find out that I'm the first guy who ever interviewed you, because that's kind of a crime, because people should be talking to you guys, because you guys add a lot to, you know, every book that you guys do. So I'm just glad that, you know, I just want you to know that your work is appreciated.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that.
All right, everybody, you guys take care, and we'll be back next week.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pat Loika. You can reach Pat by sending an email to loikamania@gmail.com. This has been a Dial R Studios production.